Yep. All righty, here we go. All right, everybody. Tom and Curly Show's back. Get back to your seat. Let's get going. Oh, I think Hannah Scott's going to come in. Diving in the door! All righty. I'm just glad Dougie and the Axeman and Wayne and the rest of the gang that sit in that garage there, Tom, right off of Buck Lane and Cleveland, can't get the show.
And why can't they?
I don't know. I try to get it on the phone. You can't get it.
Wow.
I mean, you can get it. I just didn't show them how to get it.
Right.
You know, hold some things back. All right, let's get Hannah in here. Lots of news. How about Hannah asking the trenchant question? Good for you, Hannah, making us all proud of the press conference. Good for you.
By
the rest of those saps that are sitting there not asking really hard questions of the governor, but you, on the other hand, you're doing all gently grilling the salmon. You pick them up and you flip them over and you get brown them on each side. That's good. So let's see. Where do you want to start with? What you got a couple of good ones here. What do you want to do first?
I do. We are going to start with the new app, because there's an app for that, right?
Yeah.
I think we just heard a little bit of it in Heather's newscast. And yesterday, this is about, of course, the new technology that the state has launched to try to help keep track and notify people about the coronavirus and if they are in danger of possibly getting it. Yesterday, the governor was excited to announce the launch of that new program.
We now have a tool that we're going to be making available to Washingtonians to make sure that you know if you've been close to someone who's positive with the virus. So this is a tool that when you're out and about and you use your cell phone, your cell phone can effectively alert you if you've been in close proximity with someone who's tested positive. Feature, we're calling it WaNotify.
WaNotify. So made through Apple and Google and the University of Washington. If you have the Apple phones, you can go into your settings and just hit, enable it is what it's a little bit easier. And then you have to download it, I think, as an app in the Android's Google Play Store. Now, here's how it works.
We'll alert people without ever having to share personal information. And this is the beauty of it. This is a program that will alert you if you come in close proximity to somebody who's positive without ever having to share your personal private information. So let's just talk about how this works. Let's say you're out in public and you spent time near someone who at some point is positive for the virus. When two people using WaNotify are near each other, their phones exchange random codes using Bluetooth technology. That means this is anonymous, and it does not involve location tracking. If one of those people later tests positive for COVID-19 and they enter a verification code from public health officers into WaNotify, anyone with WaNotify who was near that person during their infectious period will get a notification they may have exposed to COVID.
So, like that. Now, here is why they want all of us to sign up for it.
Data suggests, models suggest that even a small number of people who use WaNotify in King, Pearson, Snohomish counties alone would reduce infections by up to 11% and deaths by up to 15%.
So
is he doing this press conference from the trunk of a car? This sounds like Miller's Crossing, where the guy was back there, and then they opened the door, and then I think it was Joe Pesci beat him with a softball bat to death or something. Is he double masking up, or why does the governor sound even more distant and somewhat disconnected from reality?
I feel like that might be my technology. I'm not 100% because I don't remember. I was thinking I don't remember him sounding like this yesterday, so it might be my fault. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But you understood what he said, though, right?
I got it. So they're going to turn it over to technology. How are they doing with their contact tracing?
Yeah, not awesome. So this was brought to my attention yesterday. Essentially, the state has these goals that they want to reach. It's, for every positive test they get, they want to reach 90% of those people within that first 24 hours.
Right.
And talk to them and you know, start the contact tracing process. And they said when they launched this in their various reports that they have online that it was not that, you know, they weren't going to meet the goal right out of the gate, and they didn't. But it's been up and running, and they do these weekly reports. And I don't know, mid-October, it was about 84%, I believe they were reaching. And then a couple of weeks later, it dropped to 60, 70%. The last week that they reported on, which is the middle of April, I think it's the 8th to the 14th, dropped all the way, I'm sorry, the middle of November, all the way down to 6%, 6% from 84% to 6% that they're reaching on day one. And also there's a, it talks just about how many they're actually reaching out to, not how many they actually reach is another goal that they look at. And that too is somewhere in the 70, 80%. And they're only doing it like 5% of the time for that particular week. I asked the state health secretary about this yesterday and whether there was any concern about this leading to more spread of the virus. And here's what he said.
So part of the, I have not actually looked at the report yet myself. The challenges that we've been receiving certainly are within that 24-hour report of being able to actually contact folks. This is the piece where we need folks who are willing to answer phones and be able to return our calls. We continue to work, as the governor said, in hiring folks. I know that some of our local health departments are also feeling the strains of this and continue to do our best to get a hold of people as quickly as we can once we get those results.
6%.
They're working on it.
This is Todd Meyer's work, right? Didn't Todd dig through all this and find this story from Washington Policy Center?
He did. He did. He goes through all of the reports. He loves the numbers. And
he does.
Brought it to my attention and I think your attention. And I was surprised to see the numbers. But so there's a couple of, to put some this in context, the first week in this report is the middle of October, where there was a total of 485 cases of that were reported for the particular the level that they're looking at, the day that they're looking at. And that moved up to 2,787. So there was a dramatic increase in the number of positive cases. And I think they just don't have the staff for that. They had the National Guard working with them for a while. Then they stopped. I think they are doing that again. They're in the midst of hiring. I want to say it was 350 or so people that they're bringing on to do this contact tracing work. But it sounds to me like, just looking at the numbers, they don't have the staff to do what they need to do.
I asked Todd about that this afternoon, and he told me, well, he goes, even in the before they had tremendous amount of cases, they were contacting about 234 people a day. They're now contacting 134 people a day, or something like that. So the number, even the number of contacts that they're making per day, has decreased. So I guess they're increasing the number of people, but not contacting or something. But again, the goal was 90%. They've hit 6%. And this is your government working hard in order to be able to contact trace.
Okay, but John, then your government was working hard in the beginning when it had 84%. I guess the question I would have is, are the people, is there more and more resistance now to sort of turning over their information than there used to be? If early on we didn't know what the heck we were dealing with, it was like a modern day plague and all this, I'm wondering if the contact tracers have found more and more resistance, like fewer and fewer people returning their calls or even picking up the phone because they just don't want to be, dragged into this. I'm just wondering how many people think of this as a government plot and all that.
Well, I don't know how many think of it as a government plot. I know that they do absolutely have problems with, and I think you heard the Secretary Wiesman mention it there, that it's very important that they get people who call them back. But again, this report from this particular week shows that they didn't even actually make that effort to make that first call.
Initially, very much
of the time, which is a concern. So, but yes, they do. I hear this from local health officials as well, that there are more people who do not answer. And it's not necessarily a plot. I think some of it has to do is with the recommendation that you have quarantine and people who are back at work don't necessarily want to.
Right.
Yeah.
I get that.
They don't force them to quarantine, but they certainly, if they're all told to have to quarantine for 7 days, that's 7 days of work that you lose. And you simply don't want to be involved in it. So
is this app designed? Could the app solve some of these contract tracing problems? Is that the idea, that it'll alleviate some of that?
It's a couple of different things. A part of it, it can help with that contact tracing. If you sign up and you want to take part in the program, it can certainly alert you and make you know that you go get a test. It's not necessarily going to replace contact tracing. It's just, I think they said it was like an extra layer of effort in that area. Mm-hmm. But also, as those numbers that you heard him describe, Governor Inslee, that is that if just 15% of people sign up for this app in Pierce, King, and Snohomish counties, yeah, their numbers, their modeling says that's going to lead to 11% fewer infections, 15% fewer deaths. Yeah. So that means, you know, that's good.
These are projected, right? These are projected cases?
Modeling,
right. Okay, so we know how well they do with that. Overall, how are we doing with, because Tom, cases don't mean anything. Cases mean nothing.
John,
cases
mean nothing. The same argument. I'm not going to get into that.
Because you're not able to support your side. I can with facts. You are able to present the idea that the government is right. No, Tom.
There is a correlation between the number of cases and deaths.
Ultimately,
and hospitalizations.
Right. Let's talk about that. So, Hannah, how are we doing in the ICU? Are we overrun at this point?
We are not overrun yet, but we are getting full. And I'll tell you the latest health official I heard from today was in Snohomish County, uh-huh, where they have, he gives the same update every week. They had a 20% increase in cases. They have a significant increase in hospitalizations and a significant increase in their ICU bed usage. He sounded more concerned than he did the week before, which tends to be the trend with him, but they are seeing those significant numbers. Hospitalizations are going up. 136 new hospitalizations in the last 24 hours statewide.
So the question is that back in May, when we had the two additional hospitals that were built, saw absolutely no patients, total amount was 450 possible beds, all of them remained empty. And we had at the top, it was at April 17th or right in there, 634 people were in the ICU. So if it's going up, and right now 34% of ICU has COVID in there, why don't they bring those hospital beds back rather than possibly shutting down and continue to destroy lives? Why not rebuild the beds again if we are up above? And I think we are above the height of where we were in April.
We are either right at that level or right above it. Yeah.
Right.
And the reason is because the federal government paid for that. My guess. The big tent that we had, the CenturyLink field facility that they set up that we never used, that was all the result of assistance from FEMA and the federal government. And that's not happening right now.
But why? We have $1.8 billion in revenue that hasn't been used. Why wouldn't the governor leading this state, why not take the money that he has and put that towards building hospital beds? If that's the infrastructure problem, and that was the lie that we were told back in March, was to flatten the curve. Now, what will he possibly do? Will he continue to shut down again? Will he tell people that are kids that are playing soccer to wear a mask in the rain, even though that's completely ineffectual to be able to stop COVID? Or will he build beds, put beds back in place to take care of the overflow?
I don't think you're going to see him build anything. It's just not something that's going to happen. I don't even hear that that's anything that would come up in the legislature when the session starts. I think that you will continue to hear him say that the federal government needs to help. I think he expects some of that help will come when Joe Biden transitions to the president's. And I think that he really counts on all of us doing our part to not get to that ICU
That's
level.
Right.
We are still better than most other states. You know, Gavin Newsom in California just said yesterday he's about to go to full lockdown because they're not listing and they have too many cases a day. And there are other states that are doing that. We aren't there yet.
Right. Like Peru, like Spain, like the UK, all did huge lockdowns and the numbers continue to spike. So the question is,
Britain, it just worked. They just did it for a month, and they say, they dropped it by like 35%. So now they're thinking they're going to open up for Christmas.
No, they're
so
doing
lockdowns
tiers.
On a temporary basis actually do work.
I don't know where you're getting that, Tom. The tier thing is what they're thinking of doing again, which would be more lockdowns in the UK. I'm talking about severe lockdowns like Peru did, severe lockdowns like Belgium did. The severe lockdowns don't work. As the CDC has pointed out, lockdowns don't stop the COVID. We have had it, and you see it in California. They're going to lock it down even more. My point is
because
this. Why doesn't the governor, I'll
down.
Finish and then you can interrupt me. Why doesn't the governor take care of the infrastructure, which is the ICU beds, which he keeps telling us about? They just wag the finger. You don't. You better wear a mask. You better keep apart. You better not do Thanksgiving together. Build a ICU bed, Tom. If that's the big problem that we had 400 before. We didn't use any of them. But as the numbers spike, get the beds in place.
Those beds were, they're there for recovery. They weren't there. They weren't doing the heavy ventilation business in those tents. Those were for recovery. And all the people that had to be displaced and didn't have their cancer surgery or all these kinds of things, those were the ones that were impacted. We don't want to have to do that again. So rather than building, like in China, building an entire hospital with that kind of infrastructure, it's just if people would stop traveling and stop wearing masks,
really?
They could bring it down themselves. Yep. And that's the idea. And I think you'd like it because it'd be cheaper. Wouldn't cost taxpayers money that you're always so worried about.
Yeah. And the other point I'll make is that I don't know the exact answer as to why not. There are a variety of other spending needs I know at this point. What I will tell you is that even if he did build more capacity, there is no one to work there. There's not enough staff to expand that.
Okay. By the way, I just heard from Todd, who did the work on the COVID contact calamity. He said the
state, is he checking up on me?
Yeah, he just said the state is only trying to contact 11%, so it isn't about the people rejecting. They've dropped down to 11%. That's,
I know, but why? See, the problem with Todd's article is he says, well, we have the resources, but there's not enough staffing. Well, I don't understand who's making that decision to not staff it up.
It's
that's
not
what
Todd.
He needs to address.
It's not Todd.
But they are in the middle of bringing on 350 more workers to do this contact tracing that is currently happening right now. So presumably these numbers would get better. We'll keep an eye on it.
Okay. And we'll continue to be scolded by the governor telling us that. Is he eventually going to threaten us with more
lockdowns?
Or
John Curley. You're more of a scold than Jay Inslee is, John.
Yeah. No.
You can understand me because I don't have a mask on my face. Will he continue to scold us? Will he possibly do lockdowns, killing more people?
It's possible. Look, if we see a huge surge on top of a surge, as Anthony Fauci said on Sunday, if we see that 2 weeks after Thanksgiving and the hospitals are overrun, the ICU beds are gone. You bet. I think there'll be more lockdowns. Will he lift the current situation on December 14th? He's not saying yet. I think probably not. We've got the holidays, people traveling, and cases going up. Right now, all eyes are going to be on what happens with cases in the next week or so.
All right. Thank you, Hannah. Appreciate it.
You bet.
There she goes out the door. We never got to the insurance question. We'll have to take that with her tomorrow, and I'll scream at her about that. Not at her. With her. Good Thanksgiving, Tom. Did you just keep, did you follow government's instructions and stay home and stay down and stay low and not spend any time with family members?
For Thanksgiving, I certainly didn't. I had my mom down over the weekend, for an overnight, but it was for the first time in my life. I spent Thanksgiving basically alone. My wife and I, we had our spaghetti carbonara, and we just,
oh, that's right.
It was amazing. It was just this tiny little affair, and it was fine. I do miss the big Thanksgiving feast, but in times of peril, John, it was quite fine. It was fun. It was different.
Good for you. So you weren't one of the 50 million Americans that defied the government and went out on their own and actually traveled and spent time with family members.
I was not.
No. Okay, good. Well, hopefully you get a chance to have another Thanksgiving next year.
Yeah, that's right. Unlike some people, huh? Yeah. But nobody cares about my stay-at-home celebration.
Well, no, they knew that you were doing the pasta carbonara,
right.
Whatever that is. So
that's right. But everyone's dying to find out.
No, they're not.
How did
John
Curley handle Thanksgiving in the woods?
Well, defied the government edict, and she got on a plane like I think 3 million other Americans did because they weighed the risk and they thought, I'm going to fly down. She went down to Austin to go see Chuck. Charlie's down there with her boyfriend, and the two of them are getting along, and it's like... Let me get this straight. You have no money, but you spend $1,200 on a couch with the kids. It's the weirdest thing that the kids don't have any perspective. They're like, well, what am I going to get? A lousy couch? I'm like, no, I got an idea. How about you get a crappy couch? Because you have no money because you're 19 years old.
Exactly.
You get a crappy couch. We had to get when we spent like $2,000 on the mattress. $2,000 on the mattress? I think we built our own mattresses when we were 19 years old. Bags of sand and concrete. It was like crazy. And
you've raised pampered kids.
The two of them together. They have like no concept of any of it. So that's what Lace did.
Okay.
So Rye was at home. So I said, Rye, come up and go to the cabin. He said, I have no problem with that. So I started to make a 4-pound turkey breast, and then he gets there, and I thought, this is going to be really bad. So luckily, Dougie, who lives up the road there, he said, why don't you come up and spend Thanksgiving here? We got all the fixings. So I went and I said to Rye, if you come up, I'll get you your favorite pie. What's your favorite pie? He says, I want banana chocolate cream pie. So I go to the bakery there in Clee Ellen. The lady recognizes me as Evening Magazine host John Curley, watches me every night, which is weird. Maybe she does because I haven't been on in 10 years. Maybe she's the person outside the cabin. And I get the pie, and it weighs like 50 pounds, and Rye comes. I said, we're walking up the road to Dougie's. We go up the road to Dougie's. We walk in. Not to the house, but into the garage. And by the way, up on the Facebook page, you can see where we spent Thanksgiving. I took video of it, so you can now look and see. So you walk into a gigantic garage filled with old tractors, bits and pieces. There are tools everywhere. And there's a giant wood-burning stove there. And on this table, which is on top of tires and a bunch of other piles of junk, is the turkey and all the fixins. I turn around and look at Rye. There's only... the one thing bigger than the pie are his eyes, because he's looking at me like, is this some sort of a joke? And with that, I had put the pie down, Rye, on the tractor. So he does. He puts it on the tractor seat, and then we proceed to get our stuff and sit down, not on like at a table, but on like folding chairs that are covered in dirt, and they've got the little thing that you put your beer next to on the side, the little folding thing. Yeah. It's like a chair from the 70s. And you'll sit there and you're eating off of your lap where you're. And for Rye, it's more convenient because he's 6'3". So his knees are right under his chin and he's there consuming. And the conversation's like, and by the way, Jacob, get the beep sound ready, because every third word is the F word with these guys. We're all sitting around the fire. And he's like, so I'll point to everything. He goes, that's just practice. Okay. So I said, so do you guys, hey, Ryan, these guys all went hunting. They invited me to go hunting the other day, like a week ago. How many of you guys actually went hunting? He's like, what were you at? Well, like, there was like us, and we're all, I said, well, how big is the thing that you were in? Oh, that was like 16 by 16. I'm like, well, that's a lot of guys in one little thing. Oh, my God, there was so much and so much. And we were doing all this, and we're standing out, and I'm thinking, like, wow, there's a lot of cursing. And this is like, like Thanksgiving Indians and the Pilgrims cursing. So he goes on to explain to me, 8 men in a 16 by 16, like, cabin thing. It was 8 degrees below zero at one point. And I said, so what's it like? He goes, one guy goes, oh, well, Dougie goes, yeah, at one point, this rat runs across my face. And who was it, Gary or Jimmy? Jimmy. Jimmy yelled, get out, I'm sick of this. And he takes out a shotgun, and shoots the rat. I said, inside the cabin? Yeah, we all got down. He shot a hole.
We all got
that
down.
That went through the roof. So the next day, we had to fix the roof, the hole. We're all out there fixing the roof. I said, well, what happened to the rat? Oh, rat. There's bits and pieces of the rat everywhere. I mean, Jimmy hit it with a shotgun. I'm like, oh, my God. And he's talking about the farting and the stinking and everything else. So you get some idea of the type of people, right? All right. Okay. So then I look over at Rye. I said, why aren't you eating your pie? And he goes, I got that fork problem. I'm like, what? I can't eat the pie with the same fork I eat turkey. I'm like, Rye, are you? Okay, listen, do you get some idea of the type of men that are surrounding you right now? These are men that shoot a live rat inside a building.
With a shotgun.
With a shotgun. And then the next day, they fix the effing roof with rat guts everywhere. Dad, I know they're looking at me because we brought the pie, but I can't. And all of a sudden, what's wrong with you? Why are you eating your pie? And Ryan's like, I've got to get to it. No, what's wrong? What's wrong with the fork? And Rye goes, And I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it. Whatever you do, don't admit it. Don't admit it. And Rye goes, I can't eat the pie with the same fork that I ate the turkey with. And he's like, why not? He's like, this is bits and pieces of turkey on the fork. You know what? Put it in your mouth and clean it off. Clean it off with the same mouth you ate the turkey with, and then eat the pie. I was like, try that. Can't do that. And then with that, Dougie has to get up, which is like a like a woman who's about to give birth, gets up out of the chair. He has to go in the house, come back out. He's holding three forks, and I guess it's like, which one is not the filthiest? So then Rye has to, like, Rye's like examining them, and he's like, oh. He takes the one closest to him, thinking that he'll sit down, and then he kind of moves the pie all around. What's wrong? You're still not eating the pie. And then the other guy's like, what's the problem with the fork already? I'm like, Rye, again, this, you should have done this, and I can't do anything to protect you. So I'm like, and then I thought, you know what? I got to throw him to the wolves. I'm like, how about my son? Can't eat a pie with a fork. Because I couldn't, because he's going to leave, Tom, and I still need, these are my friends, right? So I can't, so I have to cut him loose. I'm sorry. I've got to, it's like outrunning a bear. Just have to run the fastest, the fattest guy. Oh, my God. And I'm like, I just eat it. He goes, God. I said, I spent $20 on the pie. And he took it home with him, and I think he found a fork at home. But I remember thinking, I was like, you understand the type of people surrounding you right now.
He probably went home and flopped down on a $1,200 couch.
I felt so bad throwing him to the wolves, Tom.
At least it was outside, though, it sounds like.
No, we were inside.
Well, but it was a garage, you said.
Big garage. You can look at it. Watch, go to the Facebook page. You can see it, yeah.
I will indeed.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, the breaking the wind and the thing and then...
And let me guess, no masks.
What do you think? Think people were in masks? No, not wearing masks. No masks. All right, we'll see what happens. But we were six feet apart, 10 feet apart, because the chairs were all there in the thing, separated by big hunks of transmission and stuff. I should have gone hunting with those guys. Would I come back with some great stories? Huh?
You absolutely would. Oh, you still can.
No, I'm not going again. No, because a couple of times they had too many guys, and everybody had to take turns sleeping outside on a cot. Can you imagine how cold that was?
Oh, my gosh.
At least you'd avoid the rat guts being blown out of the sky by a shotgun.
Just bring an extra fork.
All right, Tracy Taylor. At mynorthwest.com, you can text as well at 98973. Be a part of the Tom and Curly Show. Jacob kept saying, John kept sending me this story. I didn't keep sending it. I accidentally sent it to you. I didn't realize it didn't. I just kept forwarding, and I'm sorry. It wasn't what I was excited about. I just accidentally hit the button three times.
Well, you know, you and your hair.
Oh, yeah, me and George Clooney. George Clooney and me. George Clooney and I. Clooney says that he has been using Flobe. Flobe was this thing that came out in the 70s. You would cut your hair with it. It was a vacuum, and it would, like, have these blades, and you could just cut your hair as easy clean up.
And have you been cutting your own hair?
Mm-hmm. I've been cutting my own hair for 25 years.
So it has nothing to do with quarantine?
No. Look, my hair's like really like straw, you know, and so it's easy to cut. You can't really make too many mistakes. So years ago, I bought a thing called a Flobe, which when I was a kid, yeah.
The infomercial, the Flobe.
This ingenious device lets you give yourself and family perfect haircuts every time.
Yes. It comes with a vacuum cleaner and the clippers? Yeah, I still have it.
Stop it. You don't use it.
My haircuts take literally 2 minutes. I go,
is this Flobe?
Yeah, it's Flobe.
That is awesome.
Yeah, listen, man, it works.
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Because he never said that he uses Flobe. He said that he got it.
Yes,
I don't believe he uses it.
I know. It is a little misleading. You read the article, then at least in the clips that you play, he says, yeah, I got it, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever,
I've been cutting my own hair. And she's like, really, Flobe? He never said Flobe. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to...
You can't really make too many mistakes. So years ago, I bought a thing called a Flobe.
Right.
When we
you
were
did
kid,
not.
When I was a kid. Yeah.
Okay. When I was a kid, I bought it years ago.
Infomercial, the Flobe.
This ingenious device lets you give yourself and family perfect haircuts every time.
Yes. It comes with a vacuum cleaner and the clippers?
Yeah.
I still have it.
You still have it? Oh, I still have it.
Stop it. You don't use it.
My haircuts take literally 2 minutes.
He didn't say he, see? He didn't say he uses it. I have it. This is a guy, I remember when I went to visit the set at ER, they used to have this thing, the big sign that said, please don't take the fourth taco, or three tacos only, or we'll have to talk to you about it. It was some mean thing, because apparently they'd have too many people ate more than three tacos. Mm-hmm. So George Clooney got a taco, he hot glued it to a paper plate, and then somehow he got a ladder and he hot glued the ladder, he hot glued the plate and the taco to the ceiling of the studio, which was way up there, and it said the fourth taco. And it had been there for years and years and years. Oh, Clooney was such a, you know, joker, always cracking jokes, always doing. There's no way he cuts his hair with a Flobee. I'm
because
sorry.
Because it looks too good?
Yeah, I just, look, I had it. Yeah, you do not still have the Flobee. Tracy Taylor, does George Clooney cut his hair with a Flobee?
Absolutely. And he still looks hot.
Yeah.
No. Tom?
You could cut your hair with the Flobee and you'd still look good.
No. Oh, I went from hot to good? Thanks a lot, Tracy. Never. No. Hey. Nope.
There's a commercial possibility for you. You can start advertising
Tom,
the Flobee.
Don't try to change the subject.
With that flowing head of hair you now have over that bald spot.
I understand.
Spot.
No. Clooney's hot. H-O-T-T. I'm good.
You're
crazy. Leave it. Leave it.